I'm Tom Rowe, live in Hudson today with the WGXC Morning Show. We're going to speak with Times Union reporter Roger Hannigan-Gilson at the beginning of the show, and at the end of the show, we're going to listen back to last night's set from Lily Konigsberg from Catskill, in Catskill, at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, from a live web stream and broadcast on WGXC. So Lily Konigsberg and Roger Hannigan-Gilson coming up on the WGXC Morning Show, plus all the local news, the national headlines from the Public News Service, and the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It's all next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
You're listening to WGXC, Acra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir, llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456, mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Christopher Lee Brothers Plumbing and Heating of Albany, wishing everyone a joyous holiday season and happy new year. Red Carpet Service and Solutions since 1939. Information at CRISBRO.com.
Wavefarms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Dominic Morante in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Andrea Mako reports for Porcupine Soup that voters in the Coxsackie Athens Central School District on December 12th defeated a proposal for a $29.4 million capital improvement project, 465-232. Randy Squire, superintendent of Coxsackie Athens Central School District, said, and I quote, "While we are disappointed in the outcome of the vote, we respect the decision of the community. We will continue to work collaboratively with all stakeholders to address the challenges facing our school district and explore alternative avenues to renovate and improve our facilities to support our students' well-being," end quote. The election was not held in May, when schools approve their budgets, and usually elections on non-traditional voting days have low turnout. The proposal was for classroom renovations, improving the roof and air conditioning, expanding the fitness center, two new playing fields, and other items. In a statement, the district did not say what next steps will be other than considering their options. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Brendan J. Lyons and Joshua Solomon report in the Times Union that New York Court of Appeals ruled on December 12th that the state's congressional lines must be redrawn again. This time, New York's Independent Redistricting Commission will again attempt to draw the lines. A 4-3 majority of the court sided with the Democratic plaintiffs and ordered the Independent Redistricting Commission to submit new maps to the Democrat-controlled legislature by the end of February. Congressional lines are redrawn every 10 years after the census, but in New York, they have been redrawn several times by a special master appointed by the court and by the Independent Redistricting Commission. New Yorkers flipped several congressional districts from Democrats to Republicans in the 2022 election, and Democrats hope the new lines will help them win back those seats and win back a majority in the House of Representatives. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Ben Mitchell reports for News 10 that Amtrak has received $2 million from the Federal Railroad Administration to improve and expand service on four New York projects. That includes $500,000 for Amtrak Empire service between New York City and Niagara Falls via Albany, Utica, Syracuse, Rochester, and Buffalo. The money will go to adding trains, reducing travel time, and improving reliability. Representative Paul Tonko said, and I quote, "As a lifelong Amtrak passenger, I know firsthand how crucial our public rail system is to improving the everyday lives of New Yorkers. I'm thrilled to celebrate this critical infusion of funding that will enhance the safety, reliability, and speed of intercity rail service in our capital region and beyond," end quote. Amtrak Adirondack service between New York City and Montreal is also getting $500,000 in funding. And you can read more about this story at News 10. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We've spent months in this investigation accumulating evidence. We have a simple question that I think an overwhelming majority of Americans have. What did the Bidens do to receive the tens of millions of dollars from our enemies around the world?
Kentucky Congressman James Comer is one of the Republicans who voted unanimously for a formal impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. While Comer has pushed impeachment as chair of House Oversight, polls show Americans across the spectrum feel it's just a partisan move. The president's son Hunter is a central target and this week was indicted on 9 new tax charges. Before yesterday's vote, Hunter admitted while battling addiction he made serious mistakes, but he called out the quote MAGA Republicans' distorted messages.
For 6 years, I have been the target of the unrelenting Trump attack machine, shouting, "Where's Hunter?" Well, here's my answer. I am here. Let me state as clearly as I can, my father was not financially involved in my business.
The vote will empower the House to subpoena Hunter Biden to testify behind closed doors. He has said he would be glad to testify, but only at a public hearing. Ohio Republican Jim Jordan, the House Judiciary Chair and another impeachment backer, says Hunter's protests are unconvincing.
He said his father was not financially involved in the business. And I think that qualifier, the word financially, is important because once again, it shows another change in the story. First, it was no involvement. Then, no, I never talked to anyone. And then we find out about the dinners, the meetings, the phone calls, and everything else.
The Supreme Court has announced it will hear two big cases. One case has reproductive rights advocates worried the court's conservative majority might make it harder to get mifepristone, which was used in more than half of abortions nationwide. The other case could change the criminal charge of obstructing government operations, which has been used against hundreds of January 6th rioters and hangs over former President Donald Trump. Anti-Semitic incidents on college campuses are growing, according to the Anti-Defamation League. Since the start of the Israel-Hamas war, the ADL has tracked 400 more incidents than the same period last year. Stacey Sobel is with the ADL.
The first goal of this university is to make sure students are safe and that they're providing a safe learning environment. The amount of conflict on college campuses is making it difficult for students to be able to concentrate on their work and their studies in a safe way.
A congressional bill would restore the right to vote in federal elections to people on parole or probation and those who finished their sentences. The Inclusive Democracy Act would return the ballot to an estimated 4.6 million Americans, disproportionately people of color. Keisha Morris-Dazier with Common Cause says polls show most people support the idea.
people across the country know that just because that you made a mistake in your past and you have a criminal conviction does not exclude you from citizenship and your right to vote.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, December 14th. Local early morning temperatures range from 17 degrees in Tannersville to 23 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 39 degrees. Recorded snowfall from yesterday, 2.5 inches in Porter Corners and 1.8 in Lake Desolation. Yes, I entered those just because I like their names. Both points are well north of Albany. The freezing morning ends as a cold afternoon, hitting 40 degrees at 2 p.m. Winds will be light to moderate, so don't let the sunny sky fool you. Layer up if you head outside. Overnight, temperatures fall to 28 degrees. Then, tomorrow, the mercury hits a pretty unseasonable 52 degrees at 1 p.m. A little less windy, but still pretty sunny. 33 degrees overnight takes us into a cloudy Saturday with a high of 46. Sunday, rain shows up and temperatures hit 45 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:12 a.m. Looking way up, we see the Geminids are still thumping. Last night, they were very easy to see even with unadjusted eyes. Check them out while you still can. Plasma waves will be slow at 336 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. There are low chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 114, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
And I'm Tamara, live in Hudson with the WGXC Morning Show. And we are joined on the phone with the Times Union Hudson Valley reporter, Roger Hannigan Gilson. Roger, can you hear us?
I can hear you fine. Hey.
Oh, great. We've got you, too. So you have been back to Wyndham this week.
Yes. I have been up at Wyndham several of the days in the past week. You know, when I was up there, they were still kind of waiting on snow in the town itself. But yeah, it's kind of an ongoing story with Wyndham transitioning to the Wyndham Mountain Club.
And there were there actually skiers on the mountain after the snow this week?
I was not on the mountain. I was in the town. I did get a photograph early last week. And you know, it was pretty sparse, but that was before like the snow really came. So, you know, it's probably weather dependent. I mean, everyone says that it really kind of kicks in after Christmas. That's when the true, skiing season starts.
So how is the skiing season going to start on Wyndham Mountain this year? That, I guess the locals are, wondering that, right?
Yeah. It's going to be different this year. So basically in October, Wyndham Mountain announced in a somewhat ham-handed way that they were transitioning to Wyndham Mountain Club. They did this on social media. And they also took out advertising in some of the local publications that just said, like, say goodbye to the old Wyndham Mountain, introducing the Wyndham Mountain Club. Some people were kind of perturbed by that because there was little information as to what that would entail, but it's kind of come out since then. This season, essentially the Wyndham Mountain Club is a club that it costs $175,000 to join, and then there's annual fees. You know, for this, you would get kind of in the inside circle of Wyndham. This season, at least, you can still go up for the day. However, not on Saturdays. On Saturdays, it needs to be part of a two-day pass. So you can't just, like, dodge up on a Saturday, unfortunately, beginning this winter. And that that rule also applies to holidays, to President's Day weekend. They're not allowing one-day passes. They're also capping the number of skiers a bit lower than last year to 4,000. It was about 7,000 before the pandemic, and it's been lowered since then. Initially, you know, for social distancing, but now they're lowering it further. And this is all kind of moving in the direction of Wyndham Mountain becoming this semi-private four-season resort slash club. They're constructing all these amenities. There's going to be like an indoor pool. There's going to be a racket sports complex, you know, for tennis and so forth. There's going to be a spa. All these things that are being constructed will be for the club members only. So what the town is kind of fearing, there's kind of like an initial emotional reaction, which is like, why are you making this exclusive? This is all our mountain. And then there's the more financial, more, you know, set in stone response, which is, and this is what I kind of addressed in the last article, is how will this affect local businesses? Because, you know, Wyndham's kind of a company town, only in the sense that it's Wyndham Mountain is like the center of the economy. I'm not saying Wyndham's corrupt or anything. I know company towns tended to be, so that's not what I'm trying to imply. But
it's not Queeman's.
No. Oh, was I allowed to say that? Anyway,
I can say that. Not you, maybe.
Yeah. I'll make a neutral noise. All right, but you know, all these hospitality businesses. There's something like a dozen hotels. They're mostly like boutique hotels and motels in Wyndham, and they do. You know, as one would think, most of their business off visitors, and most of those people are visiting Wyndham Mountain. And then, you know, the other ancillary businesses, there's restaurants, there's bars. I talked to several people that said during the winter that, like, A, the busy season was Christmas to President's Day, and B, that, like, during the winter, 70% of their business came from visitors to the mountain. So, I mean, it's almost if Wyndham Mountain didn't exist. I mean, like, I'm not saying Wyndham the town would not exist, but it would be completely different.
No, much smaller. I mean, just imagine if you're a bar owner, you would definitely prefer 7,000 skiers on the mountain rather than 4,000 skiers on the mountain, because that means that, you know, an extra 20 people are coming to your bar, right?
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you know, Wyndham only has like 1,700 people in it, and I mean, that population could not support the number of bars and restaurants, and not that it's huge, but the number of bars and restaurants and obviously hotels that exist in Wyndham. So I talked to a lot of business owners. Some of them were hard to, it took a while because a lot of them didn't want to speak candidly or on the record. I also just talked to a lot of people, you know, I was just walking around Wyndham for 2 days and just talked to a lot of random people about what they thought about the situation. And, there was kind of two groups. There was groups, I'm going to say there's three groups. There's the groups that were like, this is going to be a disaster. There was the group, and more residents and non-business owners said that, although one might have to take into consideration that perhaps business owners didn't want overly negative views of Wyndham in the newspaper.
Right.
So there's people that were like, this is going to be an absolute disaster. There's people that were like, people are being traumatic about this. Wyndham Mountain has been around forever, and it's gone through many ownership changes. And at one point, it was actually a private mountain in the 1960s. So this is just one of many changes. And then there was a group of people that, you know, we're kind of in the middle of those two things. But, I mean, I heard the term cautiously optimistic from like three different business owners. At the same time, they were kind of, without me asking, kind of pushing back on the negativity. I mean, the thing is, like, Wyndham's a very small, close-knit community, and some people just didn't want to stir the pot, throw gas on the fire, whatever idiom you want to use. But, you know, there was, like, a general sense of unease about it. There hadn't been great communication from the mountain. There was a kind of like this annual luncheon they had a couple weeks ago, but that wasn't, you know, officially called for the transition to Wyndham Mountain Club. It's just something they do every year. And there was some reassurances there, but, you know, I heard several business owners being like, there hasn't been any communication. We don't know what's going on. It's just the rumor mill and it's press releases, and we don't really know what the end point is going to be here, like what the end game is.
So, but is it going to be Wyndham is going to have fewer visitors that have more money?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, because, I mean, if you can afford $175,000, you have a lot of money.
Very few people that live in Greene County can afford $175,000 for a ski annual ski membership, right?
Yeah. It'd be interesting if, like, that'd be an interesting article, like, who could afford. It would be kind of like a Forbes list for Greene County. I guess the question is, like, if, you know, there's 10 families visiting versus one family with 10 times the amount of money, does it equal kind of this, does it kind of come out even? But it doesn't, unfortunately, because that family isn't visiting, like, 10 bars each night, you know? It can't spread its spending around like 10 families could.
Yeah, so they're not going to get gas 10 times. They're not going to, you know, all kinds of things, right?
So there's things like that. But, you know, the thing is, like, it's trying to become a Four Seasons destination, Wyndham Mountain, and that's why it's getting the racquetball complex and the pool. They're doing this thing that's pretty cool. It's they're having a Hudson River outpost. We don't know the details about it yet, but they're going to have some property on the Hudson River, and you can go down there if you're part of the mountain club and get kayaking lessons and that kind of thing. But what was pointed out to me subtly by a couple people is, you know, like, climate change is here. Was the existing trajectory of Wyndham Mountain going to work out anyway? I mean, we're just seeing less and less snow, less days where, like, you can ski. So, you know, this is me speculating to a degree, but, I mean, maybe Wyndham and its new owners were just realizing the trajectory of forces beyond their control, and their decision was what it is here.
But they also eliminated some of the summer activities, like the mountain biking.
They did, and people are pretty crushed about that, I will say. The mountain biking was, it was like a nationally and like world-renowned course. They had a World Cup, I don't know mountain biking that well, but they had a World Cup race a few years back.
The new Catskill bike store, the folks that own that helped organize it and are definitely upset that they're losing those trails.
Oh, yeah, I meant to talk to them. Anyway, I mean, it is upsetting because it was, like, really well done, and a lot of people appreciated it. What I heard was that, you know, they were less likely to spend money in the town than skiers. I don't think that's why the decision was made. I don't know why the decision was made particularly, but... you know, what the mountain had said is that it was like a very particular, you know, particular outdoor activity, that the trails were for like very advanced riders, and it's not like anyone could just hop on a bike and try them out. And they were trying to make it more of like, you know, something that they're trying to make their summertime activities more things that everyone could do. I don't know why they could not have continued having the bike trails. I mean, they cost money to maintain, but not much money. But yeah, the decision was made to there's not going to be those mountain biking trails this coming summer.
Any other major change that people should know about on the Windham Mountain?
Those are the big ones. This is going to be a multi-year process. I was able to acquire this letter a couple weeks ago that was sent to members of the old Windham Mountain Club, which existed. And essentially it was laying out what the future would bring. And, you know, it said that, yeah, people will always be able to come up here and ski, but the focus was going to be on members of the club, of which, you know, they're trying to sell 450 memberships, so it's not going to be like a huge club. And that is worrying a lot of business people too. Like, if the focus is on just these 450 times five or whatever, however many family members they have, how many people are ultimately going to be coming up in the winter or the summer? But, you know, I also heard that if this happened like 10, 20 years ago, it would have been more upsetting, but more people are actually coming up for non-skiing activities at this point. And it's partially just kind of the Catskills finding its economic footing again as like kind of a local tourist destination. I talked to a couple of business owners that were like, yeah, a few years ago, the majority of our business was Christmas through President's Day. But now sometimes we get as much business in midsummer because people are coming up, just to enjoy the outdoors, to hike. There's people that go up to Leaf Watch or Leaf Peep, Leaf Peepers, whatever they're called. Kind of the town and the Catskills are moving a bit in the direction of becoming a four-season destination anyway, which helps everyone out.
Yeah, I think we saw that during the pandemic, the people coming up from the city and elsewhere, the traffic that was in Hunter or on 23A and stuff like that, and the problems with the water holes where people swim with lots of trash left over and people complaining about that. So we've definitely seen more activity, more tourism, I think, lately, right?
Yeah. And, you know, there's, like, good and bad aspects to it. Like, there is... with everything, you know, I mean, it's good for there to be, you know, money coming into the local economy. But yeah, what happened in Hunter, I mean, it was kind of a disaster on 23A, and it led to all these issues. And, you know, the problem is that the Catskills don't have the infrastructure to take that type of tourism. And, you know, it led to worse things. A lot of people drowned in swimming holes last summer, like three in a few weeks. And I'm not blaming that directly on tourism, but I mean, they're random swimming holes. It's not like there's lifeguards.
So I guess we'll have to wait and see how this impacts. But we've had one snow, and I guess... but like you said, the major season doesn't really start until about 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, and that's when we'll really see. I talked to one hotel owner that said that he was already seeing his bookings down from where they would be, like bookings for after Christmas were down from where they would normally be this season. So hopefully, like you said, it was very significant, and hopefully that is just him, or that will not be the case.
Did he think it was just because people have heard that Wyndham is changing or something? Why would the bookings be down?
Well, I believe him when he said the bookings were down. I'm not sure if his assumption that it was because of Wyndham changing that this was the case. I mean, with the Saturday thing that you need a 2-day pass to ski on Saturdays, you know, how would that affect the hospitality industry? Because most of those people, since, you know, they're only up there for one day, they're just dodging in and out. So, you know, the hotel owner, well, I don't want to say either way, but, you know, he was very convinced, and I believe he knows his business, that that was the reason.
Hmm. All right. So we'll keep monitoring Wyndham Mountain and see how things change, I guess, once the busy season starts. But then for the news business, the slow season is about to start, isn't it? Are you busy next week, or are you starting to slow down?
Oh, we never slow down. No,
there is a little less news, though, right?
Christmas off. So,
so are you gonna? What are you working on for next week? Or?
Well, this morning I'm writing up. It was kind of a major decision, but it was in Hudson. The Hudson Planning Board voted to allow a haul road that connects a mine, the Colarusa's mine outside Hudson, to the dock. I kind of assume someone's already spoken about this in your program because it's so Hudson.
They haven't yet, but we've been wanting to. So yeah, tell us about. So this is a win for people who didn't want trucks in the city of Hudson, or it's a win for environmentalists, or it's a lose for all those people, or who is the Colarusa is the victor? Who came out on top in this?
I mean, the Colarusa is definitely did. This is what they've wanted for a long time. I mean, essentially, you know, Colarusa has a mine outside Hudson as a dock on the waterfront to get stuff it mined from the dock outside Hudson. It had to go on the truck route. That's the state truck route, which goes through Hudson. A lot of people did not like this. They viewed it as an environmental justice issue because, you know, these are like giant dump trucks spewing pollution, and they're very noisy, and they're also bad for the city streets. So there was a rallying cry, you know, keep the gravel trucks off the city streets. So the other option is what Colarusa's wanted anyway, which was to use its haul road, which it already owned, which circumnavigates the city of Hudson, but they need to expand it to two lanes so trucks can go both in and out, whereas right now it's a one-way, so trucks have to, you know, travel on the haul road when going, you know, only during half the journey, and the other half they go into the city. So, you know, the people... Linda Mussman, who is a supervisor in the city of Hudson, was very behind the keep the gravel trucks off the city streets movement. A lot of people were. And then there was people on the other side whose argument was a bit more complicated, but essentially they want to preserve the waterfront as being for, you know, recreation, for the enjoyment of Hudson's citizenry. And they said that, you know, it was impossible to do this when there was an industrial operation right next to the city park.
And so all that is staying in place. The trucks are still going to drive on the streets, and the industrial site is still going to be next to the city park.
The first part, yes. The second part, no. I mean, for the immediate future... But what was voted on was allowing Colarusa's to expand the haul road so trucks can completely avoid the city.
Mm.
So they'll go to the docks and from the docks on the haul road. You know, I'm simplifying the issue a lot because it's been going on for like more than 10 years. But that's it in a nutshell. You know,
and does it have to be
happy?
This was the planning board decision. Does it have to be approved by the full council, or is it a done deal?
No, no, it's just it ends with the planning board.
So this is the end of this story that we've had for years, or are there going to be appeals?
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, that's what
it's the end of perhaps the most major part of this story. People opposed to, you know, the Colarusa's haul road situation argue, and, you know, with a lot of merit, that it's not supposed to be operating on the riverfront at all because essentially property ownership along the riverfront, and a decision that was made years ago that has been very contentious about, you know, whether they have the official right by the city to operate on the riverfront, because they have a conditional use permit right now, and you know, it's believed that they violated the conditional use permit by doing additional construction along the waterfront.
And that is, the Hall Road goes through environmentally sensitive wetlands too, right? That's another part of this.
It does. Yeah. It does. That's another big part about this, because perhaps there's no great, you know, great route for giant dump trucks to go, because it's either through the city streets, through, like, you know, the most economically disadvantaged parts of Hudson, or it's on the Hall Road, which abuts wetlands and, like, environmentally sensitive areas. So, you know, there's no ideal place for the trucks to go, I guess.
Yeah, if there was an ideal route, this would have been solved 10 years ago, right?
It wouldn't have been an issue in the first place. Yeah, I wouldn't have anything to write about.
Yeah, so it's obviously there's not a perfect solution to this situation. But at least Colarusso, I guess, is happy about it. People don't know, they're a large construction company that gets many public contracts from different municipalities.
Oh, yeah, and from the county and a bit further upstate. I mean, you know, they're a big employer. They do a lot of business in the county.
And they make political donations, too. And
you know, I'm not talking to Paul till a little later today, but I'm sure he'll be happy about the decision, yeah.
Yeah, so we can we'll be able to read about that later tonight in the Times Union or tomorrow in the Times Union?
It's going up digitally around noon, and then it should be in tomorrow's paper edition, yes.
Anything else you want to preview or anything else you're working on?
Next up is Columbia County's airport. $1.5 million, you could own your own airport.
Oh, it's for sale?
Yeah, it's for sale.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because I was talking to a couple people with this, and they're like, there's an airport in Columbia County? And I'm like, yes, you wouldn't know it, but there is. You know, it's not like any commercial jetliners or commercial flights of any kind go in there, which is why you'd be able to own a point for $1.5 million. But it's in Ghent. It's near, or it's alongside 9H. And I drive that road all the time, and I never see planes taking off from there. But
you see more golfers on the neighboring golf course than you do planes moving.
Yeah, I wonder if it disrupts their golf game, just the occasional takeoff.
I don't golf, so I can't say how distracting an airplane is to a swing.
Yeah, I did for 6 painful hours in middle school, and then never again.
I think my PE classes in college were golf and bowling.
Really? So you didn't go for the football lacrosse?
No, I did not. No.
Yeah, it's funny. I did not have. Is that? Did they generally have like PE?
I don't know. I was going to junior college then, so I think maybe the junior college mandated that because I don't imagine I would be taking it on my own.
Yeah, I went to SUNY New Paltz, and, like, the student body was kind of, like, anti-sport, if anything. You know, it's just funny because, like, traditionally, like, oh, the jocks are the popular kids. Whereas, like, the kids on the sports team, people are like, why are you wasting your time with that, you know? They were kind of like I mean, they weren't ostracized or anything, but it's just like, oh, you're on a sports team, okay. No one ever came and saw the games.
Well, we've wandered into childhood nostalgia, so I think we're done with our regular segments.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Roger Hannigan-Gilson, for joining us and telling us what's going to be in the Times Union or what has been in the Times Union you've been working on, and we will talk to you again next Thursday.
All right. Talk to you then. All right. Bye, Tom.
All right.
On December 13th, 2023, Catskill-based artist Lily Konisberg performed at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. WGXC had a live web stream and live broadcast on 90.7 FM, and here is how Lily Konisberg's set sounded like.
Thank you. Do you want to be my girl? Do you want? forget about the pain.